Hello, everyone. You're listening to the Words of the Wise podcast, hosted by me, Lexi Maynard. If this is your first time joining us, or if you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe for instant updates on new episodes. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Words of the Wise podcast, or on Twitter at Words of W podcast as well. Joining us today for episode 18 is 93-year-old Mr. Howard Davis. As this was the first in-person interview I have done in a while, he made me feel right at home as he sat in his recliner with his dog Sophie on his lap while I sat on his sofa. Although almost 94, Mr. D was very with it and therefore gave me some amazing insight on how to live your best life. Here is episode 18, Mr. Howard Davis, otherwise known as Mr. D.
Hello, my name is Howard Davis. In about 2 weeks, on November 29th, I'm going to be 94 years old. And that's been around a long time.
What year were you born?
I was born in 1926.
Okay, right. And where are you from?
I'm from, believe it or not, I was born on this street that you're sitting in right now. And I was born at 1310 Edwards Avenue. I've lived at 1421 since 1950. And I was born on Edwards Avenue. I'm going to die on Edwards Avenue.
Oh, wow.
My brother tells me I've led a sheltered life.
So obviously, if you've lived in Indianapolis for this long, what's different with Indianapolis now compared to when you were a kid? How has it changed?
Well, of course, there's more people. Traffic has steadily become a problem, especially on the work days during the week. Politics have come and gone. I mean, probably we've had as many Democrats running local government as we've had Republicans. Other than that, why, the city and the mayor have done a pretty good job of taking care of things for Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm. So I know you have a brother, but do you have any other siblings?
I have a sister, and she is 5 years younger than me and still going strong.
Okay.
In addition to Ralph, my brother that just turned 100 in October, I had another brother that was a year older than he, and he died in year 2005.
Okay.
One of our claims that we were real proud of, Ralph was in the Army Medical Corps for 4 years during World War II. Chester, who is deceased, he was in the Seabees in Europe, and then he was sent to a staging area in the Pacific for the invasion of Japan. At the same time, I was aboard ship U.S. Navy, and so we were all overseas at the same time.
Oh, wow, that's pretty amazing. So what did the typical day in your childhood look like?
It depends on what age you were talking about. When I was big enough to, softball on the corner lot, mm-hmm. and lots of kids playing yard games, tag, hide and seek.
Hide and seek, yeah.
Had trouble coming up with that one. And then when I was big enough to push a lawnmower, I got a job mowing yards in the neighborhood.
Okay.
And a big yard, I would get a quarter for mowing that. And, I thought I'd died and gone to candy heaven. I was rich. And then a little bit later, I did take on a paper route, newspaper, carrying the Indianapolis News, which is, they've been out of business for a long time. But mm-hmm. I had 55 customers on the paper route.
So would you just go before school each morning, or?
Yeah, well, it was an evening paper.
Oh, okay.
And I learned how to roll them and fold them so that I could ride my bike by, and if the porch wasn't too far away, I could
toss it,
wing it on. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So what did the typical Saturday night look like for you in high school? So when you were a little bit older in your teen years?
Well, high school, started doing dating a little bit.
Okay.
You said, what were Saturdays like?
Yeah, what would you do? And where did you go to high school, by the way?
I went to Manuel High School.
Okay.
It was located almost downtown. The new Manuel is located now at about around 3000 South. And the downtown location of the old manual was one of the things that was enticing. We were 5 blocks from Monument Circle. And after roll call in the third period, some days I was known to cut class the rest of the day, go downtown, and for 10, 15 cents, I could sit through a movie all afternoon.
So you'd skip class sometimes?
Yeah.
Well, if it's right there, I don't blame you.
I had to pay for that later.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. So, obviously, when you were growing up, that was around the time of the Great Depression. When you were little, did you recognize that the country was going through?
Yes.
Through it? Yes.
Yes, because my dad was an ordained minister in the United Brethren Church. He was also a school teacher. And we lived part of the Depression in Terre Haute. And then my dad got a job as superintendent of high school and grade school down at Odin, Indiana. But we lived on the south end of the little town of Odin, had a cow that furnished our milk, and dad had a huge garden in the summertime.
Oh.
And guess who got to work in that all the time?
You.
But, you know, and really, I can remember when, well, no one really had anything. You had each other, and a dime would go a long way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what would you say is the greatest thing that your parents taught you?
Respect. Mm-hmm. And respect for your elders, which I think that's lacking a lot today, just from a few things that I've observed. But I would say that probably is the most important thing.
So we were just talking about the Great Depression, and then after the Depression hit, World War II started, and you served in the Second World War, correct?
Yes.
And were you drafted, or did you choose to enlist?
No, I was drafted because I turned 18 on the 29th of November and registered for the draft. And I was drafted immediately and went into military service 2nd day of January.
Oh, wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
And you were in the Navy, right?
Yes.
And what was your role in the Navy?
Well, I was a first class seaman is what I ended up, which would be comparable to a corporal in the Army. My duties as far as everyone had watch duties. Now, this was aboard ship, and my watch duties was steering the ship. It was 4 hours on and 8 hours off. And as long as we were on the ocean, that was your routine, day in, day out. And at the time, I don't know, it would get kind of nerve-wracking because you were on the bridge with officers coming and going and the navigator and all of that. But I was glad I had that experience. I look at pictures of my ship now and think, well, I used to drive that sucker.
Yeah.
Other than that, I was in a deck division, which meant every morning clean sweep down, fore and aft. Every third day, you had a clean scrub down, fore and aft. We hauled, well, what my ship was, we hauled landing craft, and then we hauled combat troops. We used the landing craft to take them ashore. I always said it's our job to make them mad and put them on the beach so that they were ready to fight.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was quite an experience, and I'm glad I had the chance to serve my country, and like I say, it was quite an experience.
Yeah. Where were you stationed, or were you just, like, going everywhere on your ship?
I was every place from north of the equator all the way up into the Yellow Sea at Korea.
Okay. Would you get off, and did you get to travel during that time?
Well, when you got off, it was just for a few hours.
Yeah.
Your liberty could start maybe at 10 o'clock in the morning, and then you had to be back aboard ship by midnight. But yeah, I got off in Korea, got off in Shanghai, China, and Hong Kong, and in the Philippines, and Guam. good old Hawaii. Mm-hmm. What a wonderful place.
Would you say that was your favorite place that you got off on?
Hawaii, yes. And I took my wife there in 1980 on vacation, and we went back 14 more times.
Oh, wow.
So, well, she set the pace on that because we were standing on a concourse at the airport to come home, and she looked at me and she says, "You know we're coming back." Well, I didn't know we were coming back 14 more times.
Yeah, but hey.
But, what a great place. Yeah, beautiful, beautiful place.
So what would you say is your craziest story from your time in the Navy?
Well, the trouble that I got into, do I dare tell you about that?
Yeah, tell me. I want to hear it all.
Okay. I was going to get off the wheel watch that's steering the ship. I was going to get off the wheel watch at 4 o'clock in the morning. And the pharmacist mate of the watch said, "Do you want to have some fun?" And I said, "Well, what? Man, it's 4 o'clock in the morning." And he said, "Well, I'll go down to sick bay and get these pills. And we'll go through where the 2nd Division Deck Force and some of the engineers bunk. Anybody that sleeps on their back and snores, we just drop a pill in." And said, "They'll choke a little bit, but they'll swallow it." I said, "Well, what are the pills for?" Well, he said, "The medical purpose of them is a dye, and it's to make you urinate purple."
Oh, no.
So we doctored a few guys that slept with their mouths open. And then we went up to the head to wait for daylight, and the head is the restroom.
Yeah.
And we waited for daylight to see what would happen. Well, a lot happened. The guys that the pill took effect on ended up in a line in sick bay. And then they wanted to know who did it. Well, finally they found out, and in addition to my standing watch and working in the deck division during daylight hours, I had to do an extra 40 hours duty, which I ended up in the galley scouring coffee stain off of coffee cups.
Oh, man.
It was worth it, though.
Yeah, that's so funny. So I hear that when you were in the Navy, were you in the middle of a hurricane or a typhoon?
Yes.
Can you tell me about that story?
It was a terrible experience.
Yeah.
I really thought we were going to die. If you can imagine, well, like you're sitting right here, and if you can imagine looking up on a 45-degree angle and looking at water, the waves were so tremendous that when you go down in the wallow between two waves, you can look straight out or straight up almost, and you're looking at water. The ocean was that rough. It was so rough that we had to wear bunk straps to keep you from falling out of bed at night. And we were in that for about 3 days. But yes, that was a terrible experience.
Wow. And you said that lasted for 3 days?
We were in it for 3 days. That storm moved on up to Okinawa and destroyed a bunch of shipping and a lot of physical damage to the island. I think they said that there was a total of around, 28 ships of assorted sizes that the typhoon sank.
How terrifying. Wow.
Yep, it was, to say the least.
Yeah. What would you say the Navy or serving in World War II taught you, or how did it change you, would you say?
Well, I'm trying to think. Well, one thing that taught you, whatever you were expected to do, you did it, whether you liked it or not. And you did it and kept your mouth shut. All you had to do was open your mouth and you were in trouble. And respect again for the superiors and the officers, because they had a job to do. And then by the way, I ended up a commissary storekeeper. I had the keys to a lot of the food aboard ship. So
really?
Ate well after I got those keys.
Yeah, you earned it though. You earned the right to.
But I think that was it, was obedience and being able to accept orders and carry them out.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that it did change you as a person?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
In what ways?
Well, for one thing, when I got out, I used to love to hunt and fish. Of course, I still love to fish, but I'd had enough of guns, and I went hunting one time after I got out of the Navy, and I sold my guns. I had three of them that I had bought before I ever went into the military, and I thought it isn't any fun shooting at something anymore. Yeah. So.
Yeah, so you kind of had that PTSD.
Yeah, I was a gunner on a 20-millimeter cannon aboard the ship, and that was enough.
Mm-hmm. So then, when were you done serving in the Navy? Did you serve until the end of the war?
Yes, I got out July the 16th, 1946.
Okay, and so what was it like returning?
I don't know, in a sense, it seemed different. The old neighborhood was all the same. There was a couple of fellows in the neighborhood that got killed, and so they were missed. But basically, it was nice to have everything quieted down.
Mm-hmm.
You'd been in a state of turmoil for about a year and a half, and so it was good to get back into the old routine of life.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've learned in history courses and spoken to some folks about what America was like after the war ended. So what was that experience? Was America as happy and celebratory as people say after the war ended?
Yes, I think so. And troops that we brought back, which by the way, my ship was, they called it frozen. No one could get out of the Navy because we had to transport troops back to the United States. And we brought some into San Francisco and some of them into Seattle. And the first troops that returned, there were bands on the pier welcoming them home, and on the hills across from the Golden Gate Bridge, the people in San Francisco had a big welcome home on that hill. But then later the bands kind of disappeared, and I don't know, it seemed to me like a lot of the native people had kind of a ho-hum attitude, you know, we've been down this road before, that's enough. But I don't think really the troops cared. They were so glad to get back in the United States.
Yeah.
Didn't make any difference.
Yeah, I bet. So what did you do for a living when you returned from the war? What was your job?
First, I started back to Purdue Extension, and I found out I wasn't settled down enough for it, and so I got me a job at Sears Roebuck.
Okay.
And as it ended up, I stayed at Sears Roebuck for 39 years.
Okay, and what did you do there?
Well, I had the last 18 years of that, I was a division manager of home improvements.
Okay.
Plumbing, heating, and building materials.
Yeah, and why did you choose that job?
I think the job found me.
Okay. And why do you say that?
Well, I started in the stock room at a fantastic salary of $18 a week. And in 6 weeks, I got a raise, a nickel on the hour, which that gave me two extra dollars per week. Of course, now we're talking about you could fill the gas tank on your car and it would last you about 2 weeks' time, and the gas had only cost you about 28 cents a gallon.
Oh, wow.
So you didn't need a tremendous amount of income. But someone down in sales talked me into leaving the stock room and going into sales, so I started selling automotive. And from there, I transferred to the building materials department and became what they call an indoor-outdoor salesman. You'd get leads in the store and go to the homes and figure a new roof for people or siding or storm windows and write up the orders you hope in their homes.
Yeah.
And from that I went to Sears, had me on several new store openings, setting up the departments, and I helped set up in Indianapolis, I helped set up Washington Square, Castleton, and Greenwood, and then I stayed, I always called Greenwood my headquarters. So that's my experience with Sears Roebuck.
And what was your favorite part about that job?
Meeting people, I think. And the challenge of, I enjoyed the challenge of being on budget with my inventory, with my payroll, and I just enjoyed the challenge of being on budget all the time.
Mm-hmm. And what career advice would you give to someone who's about to enter the workforce? So I'm in college right now. I'm about to go out and look for a job. So what advice would you give to someone my age regarding their work?
Find something that you like. Don't take a job just to get a job. But you can really make a career out of a job if you get something that you like. See, I liked what I was doing at Sears, and I liked the challenge of meeting payroll, meeting budgets, and so forth. But no, that would be my advice to you.
Okay.
Get something that you like. That you can really live with.
So now let's talk about your wife. So what was her name?
Wilma.
And how did you meet her?
I met her when I got out of the Navy. A buddy of mine fixed me up with a blind date.
Okay.
And that's how I met her. And we went together for a while. And I don't know, I think they called it back then, they called it going steady. And then we broke up and were separated for, well, I don't know, probably 6-7 months, and got back together again, and then that led to marriage.
Okay, and what was that first blind date? Do you remember where you went?
We went to a movie.
Okay, so how would you describe her?
She was a very efficient person. When we got married, she didn't know, literally, she didn't know how to boil water. But her mother was an excellent cook. Always liked to go to their house for dinner. And Wilma would call her mother, and her mother would instruct her what to do. And Wilma turned out to be an excellent, excellent cook. She was a good mother to our two daughters. And gosh, you can't ask for more than that.
Uh-huh. So how did you propose to her? How did you ask her to marry you? And how old were you when you got married?
25.
Okay.
She was 3 years younger than me. I think I just said, what do you think about getting married? Is that a proposal?
Yeah. If she said yes, yeah.
Yeah, she said yes. And that was 1950.
50? Okay. What's your wedding anniversary? What day did you get married in 1950?
June. Now, just a minute. No. We got married in May. I think it was about the 27th.
Okay.
I get mixed up with Wilma's birthday. Her birthday was June the 6th.
Okay. How many years were you married?
Oh, geez. 61 years.
61? Oh, wow. So that's a very long time. So what would you say is the key to that successful long marriage?
Instead of arguing about something dumb, just keep your mouth shut. It's easier to agree than it is to start an argument.
So pick and choose your battles.
Yeah, and really, really, there isn't too much to fight about. If you want to do something, you can present it to the other person. They can accept it or reject it. And if they reject it, go on.
Mm-hmm.
Don't dwell on, like they say, don't beat a dead horse to death.
And so you just mentioned your daughters. Do you only have two children?
Yes.
Okay. What are their names, and how old were you when the oldest was born, and how old were you when the youngest was born?
Kathy is the oldest. Cynthia is the younger of the two. Kathy was born in 1953. Gosh, how old would I have been?
You've been 28 then?
That'd be about right.
Okay.
And Cindy was born 4 years later, in 1957.
And what lesson did you stress the most to your girls when they were little?
Do your homework and quit griping about it.
What would you say is the most rewarding part about being a parent?
I would say the love that's involved with the family unit. And basically, you're the teacher. How well that turns out is up to you.
Mm-hmm. And what would the Mr. Davis of today tell himself as a young husband and father? So if you could go back and tell your younger self a piece of advice, what would you say?
Don't ever go to bed mad at each other.
That's good. I've heard that one before. How many grandkids do you have? Are there other?
Yeah, I had four grandchildren.
Four grandkids? Okay.
I have 1, 2, 3... I have 5 great-grandchildren.
Okay. And what would you say is your favorite part about being a grandpa?
Oh, yeah. Having the kids come visit and play table games with them. And mm-hmm. I used to be able to get down on the floor. Play Yahtzee. And
yeah. Love Yahtzee. How old were you when you retired?
57.
What did you spend your time doing after you retired?
Well, we traveled a lot, and I had the opportunity to buy some ground in northern Michigan, and I bought that in 1985. We built a cabin on that ground, and the property was in the edge of a little village in northern Michigan, and the property ran from a street down through a wooded area to a river, and this property already had a boathouse there. So we built a cabin, got a boat, and spent about 7 months out of the year in northern Michigan, and weather permitting, went fishing every day. When it rained, Native Americans had built a really nice casino in town. Mm-hmm. So if it rained, Wilma always wanted to go to town. She never said, let's go into the casino. It was always, can't go fishing today, why don't we go into town? Well, I knew it was time to take her to the casino.
So she liked to gamble.
Oh, yeah.
But she wouldn't admit it. She would just say, let's go to town.
No, well... And she's pretty faithful on playing the penny and nickel machines. I was the bookkeeper and bill payer, and I never did tell her how much we owned in finances, because I was afraid if I did, she would start playing the quarter machines.
So you said that obviously you had this place in northern Michigan. You said that you traveled to, did you travel to Hawaii the first time with your wife after you had retired?
Yes.
Okay.
Of course, I was in and out of Hawaii while I was in the Navy.
Yeah.
With Pearl Harbor being there. But, 1980, we took our first trip. Wilma wanted to get a new house. And I said, okay, we can do that. But if we get a new house, we can't afford to travel and have the kind of house that you're thinking about. So you make up your mind. What do you want to do? Do you want to travel, or do you want to get a new house and make mortgage payments?
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank God, she says, I think I'd rather travel. So we did a bunch of traveling.
Yeah. Where else did you go?
All within the United States, with the exception of Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island up on the St. Lawrence Seaway, came down through what they call the Evangeline Trail, and the East Coast, Maine, and a lot of the New England states.
Mm-hmm.
Went to California, Arizona, Washington, state of Washington, Minnesota. Geez, that's a few of them.
Everywhere, yeah. That's awesome. So would you say Hawaii was your favorite place that you went?
Yes.
Yes. And then also, throughout your retirement, I know, like, just like now, like, you and your 100-year-old brother, what's his name again?
Ralph.
Ralph. You two are really close. How often do you see each other, would you say?
Oh, usually I'll see Ralph at least once a week, and sometimes twice a week. I'll pick him up and we'll go to lunch. Or Ralph is declared totally blind. Now, he can still make his way through a grocery store, and he can usually find what he's looking for, but he can't read the labels on anything. And so when a neighbor down there or his son doesn't take him to the grocery and he's hurting for some groceries, well, I'll pick him up and take him to the grocery store. And
mm-hmm.
And then there's three or four places where we like to go eat. And so we'll have lunches together.
For how long have you been meeting that often during the week?
Oh, he lost his driver's license or had to give him up between 2 and 3 years ago.
Okay. And when did your wife pass away?
She died January the 5th, 2011.
Your brother has probably helped you stay busy and stuff now that she's no longer here.
Yeah, and 3 years later, he lost his wife.
Okay.
So we ended up kind of in the same boat together.
Yeah. Do you see your sister often?
Yeah. Before this virus got going, we would have a family get-together once a month. Now, my sister has a large family. When they get together now with all of her children, which I can't remember if she had 5 or 6.
Oh, wow.
Of course, they're all married, and then they've all had children. And Ruth Ellen said when they get together now, there's about 50 of them. Totally.
Oh my goodness.
Well, one of her daughters married a doctor, and they've got a house that will accommodate that many people. if you want to get together and have a pitch-in meal.
Yeah, that's great. So what's your typical day like now? How do you spend your days?
Oh, I have to have my 2 cups of coffee every morning or I'm not worth 2 cents. So the first thing I do, and it could be any time from 3 o'clock in the morning up until 6 o'clock, depending on how well I'm making it through the night. But I get the 2 cups of coffee. Of course, the first thing I got to do is let Sophie out. I put a long retractable leash on her and let her out. And then I drink the 2 cups of coffee. And then I'll have breakfast. After breakfast, I'll shave and get my teeth brushed and get dressed, take Sophie for a walk, and then after that, it depends on what I've got to do. It could be a washing. Of course, this summer, I enjoy working outside, and I had some beautiful flower beds.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed doing that. Now I'm going to enjoy helping Joey clean up leaves in the backyard.
Yeah. So you're obviously going to be 94 in, what, 2 weeks, you said?
Yes, November 29th.
Okay. Obviously, you've lived a long, great life, and you seem to be very with it for your age and still doing things. And what would you say is the key to aging so well?
Probably just being able to enjoy living and enjoying what you're doing and have a positive attitude. Don't ever take on a negative attitude. Things are what they are, and some things you can change, and those things that you can't change, don't worry about them.
Yeah.
So that's kind of been my philosophy all my life.
Uh-huh.
Like I told you, you get a job, get one on something that you really enjoy doing.
Mm-hmm. And you've lived through many world events. Like, what event throughout history would you say changed our world the most?
Yeah, I think World War II was the beginning of change. And this is with no disrespect for women, God love them, but the women went to work during World War II. They went to the factories, they built airplanes, And it's a good thing they did, and I think in one sense, the war kind of united our country. And I'm not too sure about what's going on right now, but we'll overcome it. We always have, and we always will.
And what, like you just said, right now, what we're going through, what do you think is the biggest difference between our world right now and when you were younger?
Oh, my. There's been so many changes, and I'm thinking primarily in the medical field. It's amazing what has happened in the medical field in my lifetime. The first thing, polio was defeated. You don't even hear anything about polio anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Transplants. They started with transplanting hearts, and now they transplant many of the organs in the body. That never used to happen. So I think probably the most advancement that I could name would be in the medical field.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that much about the medical field.
But just what you do know, yeah.
Yeah.
As you look back on your life, who were the people who had the biggest impact on you or influenced you the most, would you say?
Well, I would say probably my parents, especially my dad. My dad was a great guy. He had one philosophy that he passed along to me and my brothers and sister. If you can't say something good about a person, don't say anything at all. And I never, ever remembered my father saying anything bad about anyone. And I thought that was a pretty good philosophy to take through life. And granted, I've met people I didn't like, but I didn't mistreat them. I just, according to my standards, I wish they'd have been different, but that's something I had no control over.
Great philosophy. My mom says that too, all the time.
Well, good for her.
Would you say that you have a favorite memory or time period of your life?
Probably when my first daughter was born. Of course, I think that miracle of birth is truly a miracle when you stop and think about that little creature,
mm-hmm.
which at one time we were all those little creatures.
I know. Do you regret anything?
Oh, I'm sure I do. But just off the top of my head, I can't think of anything. I regret maybe that I'm not going to have more time, but that's another thing. It's part of living.
And what advice would you give to my generation?
Work hard, be truthful, especially to yourself, and do something that you enjoy. I can't imagine anybody staying on a job all their life and hating to go to work every morning. Maybe when you get up in the morning, you don't want to go to class. And I'm sure there's some classes you don't like. But that's normal.
Yeah, but I won't be doing that for the rest of my life. So.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
You're preparing for the future.
Exactly. What do you believe is the most important thing in life?
Most important thing in life?
Mm-hmm.
Being able to accept things the way they are, changing those things that you have the capability of changing, and just enjoy every day, because you don't know when it's going to end.
Yeah.
And it'd be sad to leave this world saying, oh, I wish I had done so-and-so, which hindsight's always 20/20.
And then one more question. What do you hope to be remembered by?
Well, it was not giving those guys the pills. I guess serving my country, and was glad I had the opportunity.
And thank you for your service, by the way.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate that. All right. Oh, and one more thing. What did you say that your doctor said that every man over 50 should have every day?
Good old Dr. Reed, he's no longer with us. Every man over 50, and I assume women would qualify in this too, every man over 50 should drink 2 shots of scotch every day. And Dr. Reed lived to be 85 years old. And, well, basically, starting about, I went on a fishing trip with Dr. Reed. He's the one that got me started on the scotch and gave me that philosophy. And some days I got carried away and drank more than two shots.
Have you listened to his advice? Do you have 2 shots of scotch every day?
I'm down to 1, not every day. I mean, I'll have 2 or 3 shots per week.
Okay. Yeah.
So maybe there is something to his philosophy. I'm going to be 94 and I'm still here.
Yeah.
Well preserved, maybe.
Enjoy every day. This is exactly what Mr. D has spent the last near 94 years of his life doing, only expressing good things about others as his father did, in looking at any difficult situation, either personal or worldwide, in a hopeful light that everything will turn out okay. We thank Mr. D for his service, what he hopes to be remembered by. But more than this, we thank him for his positive presence in the world.
Northern pike that weighed around 17-18 pounds. I did have one with my grandson. Oh, I don't know. He was probably 5 years old, and Kathy and the kids came up to Michigan, and Adam, I had nicknamed him Zeke. Zeke had a little fishing pole that was 2 feet long.
Uh-huh.
The thing really was a toy. And we got out in the boat, and he was messing around with that thing and bobbing it up and down, getting the water with it. I said, Ziggy, you're going to drop that in the lake. And I'm not. What are you going to do then? He said, well, I'll jump out of the boat and go down and get it. I said, well, you can't. The water's too deep. So now what are you going to do? He says, well, I'll just say goodbye, pole. So I never forgot Zeke doing that.
Yeah, that's great. When did you sell your place in Michigan?
I sold it, had it for sale for 2 years before it sold. I put it up for sale in the spring after Wilma died in January of 2011. And I think it was 2013 by the time I got it sold and got the boat sold. After she was gone, it wasn't any fun, really, going up there anymore. I sure do miss it, though.
All right, well, I think we're good. You got a lot of wisdom there to share. I'm excited to...
Oh, I don't know if that's good or bad.
You actually are going to be the 18th person that I've interviewed. But yeah, so I just am gaining wisdom from the older generations. I'm 21 years old, so I can take all the advice I can get. So,
well, I think the best I can get you is whatever work you find something you like. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're going to hate getting up in the morning and going to work. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.